This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane in for Terry Gross. One of the surprise bestsellers of this past summer was a book written by first-time novelist Arundhati Roy. The God of Small Things is about an extended family in India, twin brother and sister, their mother, uncle, and great aunt. The mother defies the so-called love laws by having an affair with a man who is not of her caste, an untouchable. That act of rebellion has tragic consequences for the family and provides a way for Roy to explore some powerful taboos in India. The God of Small Things has been released in 29 countries, and last month it received the Booker Prize, England's most prestigious literary award. But while she has received international acclaim, the book has gotten Arundhati Roy in trouble in her own country. An Indian lawyer charged Roy with obscenity and wants the book banned unless the offending passages about this illicit relationship are removed. The case is still pending in the Indian courts. I spoke with Arundhati Roy in August about her novel. We began with a reading from the beginning of the book.
May in Imanam is a hot, brooding month. The days are long and humid. The river shrinks and black crows gorge on bright mangoes in still, dust-green trees. Red bananas ripen. Jackfruits burst. Dissolute bluebottles hum vacuously in the fruity air. Then they stun themselves against clear window panes and die, fatly baffled in the sun. The nights are clear but suffused with sloth and sullen expectation. But by early June, the southwest monsoon breaks, and there are 3 months of wind and water, with short spells of sharp, glittering sunshine that thrilled children snatched to play with. The countryside turns an immodest green. Boundaries blur as tapioca fences take root and bloom. Brick walls turn moss green. Pepper vines snake up electric poles. Wild creepers burst through laterite banks and spill across the flooded roads. Boats ply in the bazaars, and small fish appear in the puddles that fill the PWD potholes on the highways.
And that's Arundhati Roy reading from the beginning of her book, The God of Small Things. How would you describe what your novel is about? It's a complex story. It moves forward and backward in time. It has a complex cast of characters. How would you distill that story for the audience?
Well, I have to say that that's one thing that I just can't do, because I sort of wage a one-woman war against simplification, you know. And to me, the book is the simplest way of saying what I had to say. So for me, you know, The God of Small Things is really, it isn't the story that matters, you know. It's an ancient story. It's a love story. It's a story about childhood and motherhood and intimacy and transgression. It doesn't matter where it's set. You know, the fact that it's set in India is only because that's where I grew up and that is the territory that I know. But for me, it's a story about biology, about our biological natures.
Well, one of the transgressions in the novel has to do with the love law, and the mother in this story, Amu, falls in love, has a passionate love affair with a man of a different sect, a different caste. She's Christian, he's Hindu. And in your own life, your parents mirrored that same part of the story, as your mother was from a different caste than your father.
Yeah, that's right. My mother married... it wasn't caste. It was also, my mother's from Kerala, my father was from Bengal, and she was Christian, he was Hindu. They married, and then they were divorced when I was very young, and she came back to live in Kerala.
What was the reaction to their marriage? Had they broken the love law, so to speak?
Well, the reaction to their marriage, you know, among the sort of educated upper class, if you do something like that, and you, I mean, if she had remained married to him I suppose there would not have been terrible consequences, you know. But when she left him, she had to because of, you know, various private reasons. She comes back into the heart of this traditional community. I mean, not into the heart, actually. She lives on the edge of this traditional community. Mm-hmm. And she has children. And this community then does not allow them the assurances that it would allow, you know, people. It would give people who lived within it. So what you are is, for instance, me and my brother were growing up on the edge of this mm-hmm. community, which you know meant leading an completely unprotected childhood with a very vulnerable mother as a protector.
Well, I want to have you read a passage from the book, and this is actually from the very end of the book, when Amu, the mother, is making love to this man that is such a transgression. And I should add that a man in India has said that this passage in your book undermines public morality, and you're going to have to go back and face a courtroom to defend what you wrote. But first, I want to have the audience hear your words as you read this passage.
Okay. She unbuttoned her shirt. They stood there, skin to skin, her brownness against his blackness, her softness against his hardness, her nut-brown breasts against his smooth ebony chest. She smelled the river on him, his particular Paravan smell that so disgusted baby Kochuma. Amu put out her tongue and tasted it in the hollow of his throat, on the lobe of his ear. She pulled his head down towards her and kissed his mouth, a cloudy kiss, a kiss that demanded a kiss back. He kissed her back, first cautiously, then urgently. Slowly his arms came up behind her. He stroked her back, very gently. She could feel the skin on his palms, rough, calloused, sandpaper. He was careful not to hurt her. She could feel how soft she felt to him. She could feel herself through him, her skin, the way her body existed only where he touched her. The rest of her was smoke. She felt him shudder against her. His hands were on her haunches, pulling her hips against his to let her know how much he wanted her. Biology designed the dance, terror timed it, dictated the rhythm with which their bodies answered each other, as though they knew already that for each tremor of pleasure, they would pay with an equal measure of pain, as though they knew that how far they went would be measured against how far they would be taken. So they held back, tormented each other, gave of each other slowly. But that only made it worse. It only raised the stakes. It only cost them more, because it smoothed the wrinkles, the fumble and rush of unfamiliar love, and roused them to fever pitch. Behind them, the river pulsed through the darkness, shimmering like wild silk. Yellow bamboo wept.
And that's Arundhati Roy reading from The God of Small Things. I think that's a beautiful passage.
Thank you. Well, other people don't think so.
I know. And I wonder when you wrote that passage, and even when you conceived of the story, if indeed you conceived of it in a conscious kind of way, whether you thought you would get yourself in trouble with the censorship laws in India. Did that cross your mind?
Well, firstly, yeah, I didn't conceive of it consciously. I mean, it's a story that revealed itself to me as I wrote. But there are no censorship laws in terms of actual, you know, laws when you write a book. There are in cinema and television, but not in this. I have to say that, you know, I'm always in trouble in India. So this was something which I didn't know it would be exactly this, but I was not surprised that something happened, you know, because India is a country where there can be no consensus on really important things, you know. It's a country that lives in several centuries simultaneously. And the way I look at it is that it is the fallout of literature. It's the cutting edge, you know. And for me, it's important to argue this case because that is my territory as much as it is the territory of whoever has filed it against me.
But if there are no specific laws, when you go back to India and I assume have to face someone in court, what are you going to defend and on what grounds?
Well, you see, the way it works is that a private citizen he's a lawyer, this man. He has filed against a criminal case against me in the lower court. You know, it's a district court. And when the magistrate admitted his case, it becomes like the state of Kerala versus me.
Right.
Okay. Now, I have, and what he's done is he hasn't even bothered to submit the book as evidence. All he did was to photocopy 3 pages and say, isn't this obscene? And he submits it and the magistrate admitted the case and sent a summons to me. Now, I have appealed in the High Court. And in my petition, I have actually quoted from other judgments. There are liberal judgments about things like this. You know, how do you define obscenity? And who is the custodian of public morality? And so I'm just hoping that the High Court will quash this complaint. And if it doesn't, then I'll appeal to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Let me ask you, though, and this is something I'm sure writers like yourself would have to grapple with, if it was found that there was something obscene about this last chapter and you were asked to remove it from the novel, would you do it?
No, I would just withdraw the novel. I would not tamper with it. I mean, I would not have the choice of not removing it and continuing to have it published.
Right.
But I would not publish it with passages removed. You know, I would not allow somebody to tell me what I can write and what I can remove.
Arundhati Roy's novel, The God of Small Things, won the Booker Prize, England's most prestigious literary award, in October. This is Fresh Air.